From Washington, I'm David Schultz, and this is Talking Tax. About 6 months ago, we had on this podcast Pascal Sanamon, one of the main architects of the OECD's two-pillar project to reshape the way multinational companies pay taxes. Today we have another one of those architects, Grace Perez Navarro. And as it turns out, she's coming on the podcast for the same reason as her colleague Pascal. They're both doing exit interviews as they depart the international economic body. And we're talking to them at an interesting time for their project. The second of the two pillars, the one that would implement a minimum global corporate tax, is well on its way to becoming a reality. And the first pillar, which would change the rules about where multinationals pay their taxes, is still being negotiated, with countries hoping to come to an agreement sometime this year. Bloomberg tax reporter Isabel Gottlieb spoke to Grace on her last week in the office, and she asked her about a number of topics, including the remote work revolution. But first, Isabel asked Grace what she plans to do in the immediate term, as in next week.
Next week we'll be largely enjoying the cafe life of Paris and packing for a well-deserved vacation in Italy.
Very nice.
Yeah.
To jump right into it, obviously the biggest item on the agenda of the Center for Tax Policy Administration for the last few years has been the global tax deal. Looking back over the last few years, what's been the hardest part of all of this work?
I would say the hardest part has been the roller coaster ride we've been on approaches as we go through different, shall we say, administrations in different countries. And, we started out with a blueprint, we moved on to other things. And so, that has been challenging. But at the same time, I think that it's also been a very useful exercise in exploring the different options. And I think now we are at a place where we have now finalized essentially Pillar 2, and countries are moving ahead to implement. On Pillar 1, we are making progress. We're still aiming for our mid-2023 deadline, and meetings are happening all the time, it seems.
Looking at Pillar 1, you mentioned the mid-year goal for the multilateral convention. So is work still on track to meet that deadline? And what are the last big issues that have to be negotiated to get there?
Well, we have a number of issues. We are still all working towards that deadline. And as I said, that's why people are meeting very regularly. We still have some issues around the issue of elimination of the DSTs and relevant similar measures. How do we integrate that into the convention? We have issues still around how we determine the critical mass of countries for entry into force. We also have some issues around dealing with withholding taxes. But we're making progress on those issues, and so we will just continue moving ahead, trying to narrow and resolve them.
On the question of critical mass, I had been under the impression that the U.S. would have to be part of that critical mass for Pillar 1 to go into effect, for the Pillar 1 Convention to go into effect. Is there exploration of whether that would still be the case, or is it more about defining what critical mass means, how you come up with some kind of quantitative or objective standard that would get you there?
It's the latter. We're still trying to figure out what would make sense in terms of a sufficient number of countries, and including relevant countries. And I think it's fair to say the U.S. is a relevant country. But trying to articulate a clear standard on that.
And we spoke last fall about Pillar 1, and you talked about a stage in the negotiations where countries would all sort of put their cards down on the table and everything would get bargained through. Are we at that stage yet, or is that still further down the road?
No, I think we're in the midst of that, and that is why I think we've made some progress in moving forward in the negotiations, but it's taking a bit longer to get there. But I think there's an increasing clarity, I think, on countries' positions on different issues and what their flexibility might be on some issues, depending on the resolution of other issues. And so that, I would say, we're in that process now.
Turning to Pillar 2, which is in a much different place. It's flying ahead, countries are implementing. I know there's more guidance due out and the peer review process is supposed to get rolling. Can you talk about what the OECD work on Pillar 2 over the next year is going to look like? And what's the OECD's role on Pillar 2 at this stage?
Well, I think we will be doing several things. One is we will be providing support to countries in implementing Pillar 2. We are really ramping up our efforts in providing technical assistance and things like drafting the legislation because, you know, we have the model rules, we have the commentary, but countries still want more assistance. We've heard that from a number of countries. And we're even going to use our Tax Inspectors Without Borders program to help provide the assistance to the countries that want it. So that will be a big part of it. And it's very important because that will help ensure that there is consistent implementation by countries. We always try to write really clear rules, but then when it comes to countries coming down to trying to incorporate this into their domestic legislation, there are always questions that arise. Similarly, as this is new for many, many countries, we will continue to provide guidance going forward. So issues will come up and we will address them. Then, of course, as you mentioned, we will need to set up a peer review process to ensure, again, consistency in the application, because otherwise we will have the risk of double or multiple taxation.
Turning now to a new project that the OECD is just getting underway with, the Inclusive Forum on Carbon Mitigation Approaches. I know countries met earlier this year to get the work rolling. For listeners who aren't familiar, can you describe kind of high level the goals of this project and what we might expect to see over the next year or two in terms of kind of further news or deliverables from this?
Okay, well, the aim of this project is to try to help lift ambitions in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, because we all know that the world signed up to the Paris Agreement and countries have set national goals for how they're going to reduce their emissions and to get to net zero. But we also know that the measures that countries have taken so far are not likely to achieve that goal. And so the idea was really to bring countries together, establish a dialogue about both pricing and non-pricing mechanisms to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And so what is important here and what is really interesting in this project is that it is not just a tax project. In fact, maybe the more interesting part is the non-tax aspects. What are the different measures that countries are taking to reduce greenhouse gas emissions beyond pricing? Because we know that carbon taxes are very difficult to implement in a whole range of countries. I mean, even though we've had very highly respected economists like Janet Yellen and many others say carbon taxes are the best way to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we know that as a political matter, it is not always that easy to implement. And so the great thing about this initiative is that we are bringing countries together to talk about the different approaches that they have taken in order to share that knowledge and help countries think about other measures that they can take. But it's not just a question of just sharing that knowledge. What we want to do is to establish a database or do a stock take of all of the measures, pricing and non-pricing, the countries have been taking, and then mapping those measures to the emissions that they are intending to affect. And then we will be looking at the actual impact as a second part of the project. And so it's really about data gathering, dialogue, and ultimately, hopefully, leading to decarbonization. That is the goal.
Another interesting topic the OECD is tackling, tax issues connected with remote work. And I know this is a project that's at a very early stage, but looking at it high level, what are the kinds of questions and concerns that are driving this effort? Is this coming from requests and questions from tax authorities, for example? And what sorts of issues would the OECD be looking to address here?
Well, we have had requests to work on this issue, both from tax authorities, but also from companies, because companies are very concerned that now, and this, you know, all of this really was heightened by the pandemic and everyone working remotely and suddenly discovering that, yes, a lot of great work can be done in a lot of nice places. And so companies were worried that they might inadvertently end up with PEs where an individual has chosen to go work remotely.
And PE being permanent establishment, the level at which you become subject to taxation.
The level at which a company may become subject to taxation when an individual decides to go work in another location. At the same time, that could result in additional tax consequences for individuals. And so the idea, well, one of the ideas is really to ensure that limited activity in another country doesn't produce unintended tax consequences. And so I think the main thing here is to really provide additional tax certainty for everyone, given the changing nature of this type of activity, which, you know, was happening before, but not to the extent that it is happening now, nor at the extent that we expect it to grow. We've seen some estimates say that there's expected to be a 70% increase of workers teleworking. So that is quite significant. So given this growth in this area of remote work, given the fact that there are now some countries offering tax incentives to attract so-called digital nomads, and given also the fact that there are a lot of high net worth individuals, including independent contractors and also pensioners, like I will soon be, it's important to look at a full range of issues here because, you know, you do have the basic tax issues of, you know, do you have unintended PE creation? You also have the associated income tax and Social Security issues that are related to the occasional cross-border working. But then there's also this issue that we may end up with personal tax competition where countries are trying to attract more of these highly mobile workers.
So obviously the global tax deal has taken up a lot of the attention over the last few years. But looking back across all of your time at the OECD, what other work would you highlight as especially significant and meaningful?
Well, I still think over my whole career, the issue of eliminating bank secrecy was really a fundamental one. This is something that I think no country could have done on its own, and you really needed countries to come together on this. When I worked at the IRS, this was a really challenging problem, and I remember we would tell Treasury to go and terminate those treaties they had with the countries that had bank secrecy, but that was not terribly successful. And the U.S. tried many different approaches to get countries to change their bank secrecy, but without this global push and without the help of the financial crisis, which really put this issue up on the radar of world leaders, were we able to get that change. So I think that was very fundamental, and that really helped us also develop this more inclusive approach to addressing tax issues. So we had had previously a global forum where we had invited offshore centers to work with us, provided they committed to make certain changes, but they weren't necessarily there on an equal footing with the OECD members. And so then in 2009, we changed that. That really helped provide the model for the inclusive framework on BEPS and ultimately for this new inclusive forum on carbon mitigation approaches. And so I think that whole process was really very important. I would say something more recent that I think is very important is the work that we have been doing with Brazil to change the transfer pricing rules. As you know, I think this is the only country where they've gone to from a completely different system to the OECD standard. And I think that is very significant.
That was Grace Perez Navarro, the outgoing deputy director of the OECD Center for Tax Policy, speaking with Bloomberg Tax reporter Isabel Gottlieb. And that's it for today's podcast. You can find up-to-the-minute news and the latest tax and accounting developments at our website, news.bloombergtax.com. The website, once again, is news.bloombergtax.com. Today's Talking Tax is produced by myself, David Schultz. Rachel Daigle is our editor. Our executive producer is Josh Block. From Washington, I'm David Schultz. Thanks for listening.
Hello, podcast listeners. If you don't already know On the Merits, our weekly podcast devoted to legal and government news, it's a show that features the very best of Bloomberg Law and Bloomberg Government, newsrooms that boast among the largest number of credentialed journalists in D.C. When you listen to On the Merits, you'll hear about the groundbreaking developments in the courts, in Congress, and in the alphabet soup of federal agencies that run Washington and our nation. Our show is by and about legal and government policy nerds, and we say that lovingly. It's a nerd's eye view of what professionals in the legal and government space need to know. But you do not have to be a nerd to listen. Check out our show, On the Merits, and find new episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And you can find our archive of shows at news.bloomberglaw.com/podcasts.